Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast for June 2009. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Cameron McKendrick LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you will find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. A major complaint about intellectual property litigation is that it is slow and expensive, and therefore sometimes favors the party with deeper pockets. Courts around the world are modifying their procedures to try to streamline and simplify litigation, particularly intellectual property litigation. In May 2009, the Federal Court of Canada issued a notice to the parties and the profession entitled Streamlining Complex Litigation that set out a number of procedures to make the process faster. The practice direction was announced in Ottawa at a town hall meeting of the Canadian Bar Association Intellectual Property Division. Also in attendance was the Honorable Michael Black, the Chief Justice of the Federal Court of Australia, whose court is well on its way to streamline IP cases. In April 2009, the Australian Federal Court issued its fast-track directions that would see trademark and copyright cases go to trial in less than a year. I spoke with Chief Justice Black briefly in Ottawa about his court's reforms, and I continued my conversation with him by phone from his chambers in Melbourne, Australia.
Good morning, Chief Justice. How are you?
Well, I'm well. Good evening, I should say. I think it's about, quarter to eight in the evening.
Yeah, but just after dinner here and just after breakfast there.
That's exactly right.
You've just initiated a practice direction that is called the Fast Track Directions. The practice direction says that fast track cases will go to trial within 2 to 5 months. What prompted this practice direction and that kind of speed?
That's 2 to 5 months of the scheduling conference. So let me explain. The fast track idea is it's an idea that makes case management, which we have, as you do, far more focused, far more cooperative, and far quicker. And the idea was that we would select basically commercial cases, but including IP cases, including copyright, trademarks, and so forth, for a pilot program in this list. And the aim was to have the first major event, which is the scheduling conference, within about 45 days of commencement. And then at the scheduling conference, you would fix the trial date, and the parties would know the trial date would be fixed for a period within 2 to 5 months of the scheduling conference. The result of all that has been that we have an average disposition rate, because a lot of these cases settle, of about 4 months from the commencement of proceedings, which is pretty impressive stuff. The reason we did it was that we thought that if we speeded things up, we could really eliminate a lot of the problems that are associated with litigation. We could reduce the costs, and indeed we've done that, and we could foster a necessary spirit of cooperation between the parties. And so to do that, we tested the theory in a pilot project that took place in Melbourne, one of the major commercial cities of Australia, the other is Sydney. We did that over a period of nearly 2 years. It was successful, and the day before I got an aircraft to go to Ottawa for a meeting end of April, I signed a practice note to put it into place nationally. So that's the story in a nutshell, and we're now introducing it across Australia. I should perhaps indicate to your podcasters that the Federal Court of Australia is very like the Federal Court of Canada in many respects, except one, that our judges of our national court are resident in the capital city. So although we meet together as a court quite frequently, we are divided up into different registries. So this was done out of the Melbourne registry, Melbourne and Sydney are the main commercial centres of Australia.
Now, I understand a case will go into the fast track either by the choice of the plaintiff, by agreement of the parties, or by judicial referral. In what sort of circumstances might a judge refer a case to the fast track?
A judge, I think, would refer a case to fast track if he or she really saw that it was ideally suited to a bit of heavy case management, and there's a good reason to get it over very quickly. By and large, the cases that have gone into fast track have gone on the application of the plaintiff, but a few have been put there by judges, and one or two have been taken out by judges too that just haven't been suitable for fast track.
I understand one of the purposes of the scheduling conference is to narrow the issues. Is that done by the trial judge or by another judge?
Ideally, it's done by the trial judge. It doesn't have to be, but can I explain a little about the scheduling conference? It is the one of the two, it's probably the major event of case management. Now, it's held not too soon and not too long after commencement. And it's a very intense conference. It's held, it's part of the public hearing of the case. There's a transcript and everything. It's held generally in a conference room. And no one is robed. The judge will sit there at the head of the table in the suit or business attire. The parties, all the counsel have to attend. The parties are encouraged to attend, all their senior representatives. There will be probably one of the court's registrars with ADR qualifications present to give any assistance should ADR arise, as it often does. And the judge will really shake the case from beginning to end. And as I was saying recently to someone, there's nowhere to hide. You really have to know what your case is about. If you're not admitting something, you will be cross-examined by the judge as to why you're not admitting it. There's no hiding place. You've got to absolutely come clean with what the case is about and what the real issues are. And at that time, the judge will want to know what witnesses are going to be called, in essence, what they're going to say. They'll talk about discovery. You don't get discovery unless you really need it, and you'll only get it to the extent that you need it. And you might, for example, have staged discovery. You might have informal discovery, such as, the judge might order that one party's accountant goes and inspects the books of the other and with certain undertakings to see, what more might be needed. So it's a very, very intensive case management event, and it takes place early in the proceedings. Now, that almost always results in a blueprint being set for the trial, which will be early. It almost always results in dispensation of a lot of interlocutory applications that would normally take place, and it is done against the certain knowledge that the judge at that scheduling conference will fix the trial date for a period 2 to 5 months or thereabouts ahead. So it's a powerful engine. So, and the other thing is that at the scheduling conference, the ultimate engine starts, the booster, if you like, and that is the trial date. The trial date is the engine, quite great American case managing judge. The trial date is the engine that drives case management. I may have wandered a bit off point in the answer to that question, but that's the essence of it.
With the rapidity of these proceedings, do you expect this to lessen the demand for interlocutory injunctions?
Absolutely. When my court was, my court's quite a new court in its current form. Its origins go back to a federation, but in its current form, it's quite new. I was practicing at the bar when this court was created in the 70s. In those days, there was a lot of jurisdiction and not much work to do. And if you went along for an interlocutory injunction, the judge would say, well, I can give you a trial date in a few weeks. And that was fantastic. Needless to say, the court soon became very busy. Well, it's a bit the same with fast track. Obviously, there are some cases where you need absolutely immediate relief. But we find that with fast track and this early scheduling conference, a lot of disputes are resolved between the parties entering into some sort of interim arrangement, which the court will facilitate, and there is a reduction in interlocutory applications. But I do remember nostalgically the early days of the federal court when, as I say, there's a lot of jurisdiction and not much work. You could just get on so quickly that cases fell over. Interlocutory disputes became rare, and an early trial date sorted things out marvellously. And some of that idea operates in fast track. Mind you, it comes at a price for the judge, because the judge has to work very, very hard. The bonus, of course, is that most of these cases settle early.
With respect to discovery, I understand there'll normally be only an exchange of documents that help and documents that hurt.
In essence, that's right. Discovery is one of the great cost consumers of litigation, certainly in this country. I don't understand it to be any different in Canada. We abolished some time ago the so-called Peruvian guano rule. We have a rule that you can look it up in our rules. It's basically a direct relevance or direct hurt rule. And you don't even get that unless you can show a need for it. If you can show a need for it, you'll get what you need. And then if that turns up something else that you need, then you come back for more. Even then, coming back for more would not necessarily involve an appearance in the court, because the judge, we discourage multiple applications, which are very expensive. What we would encourage is the parties to confer, consult, and only then, if they can't agree, are they indeed allowed to come to the court. And then to do that, they have to present the court with effectively a have conferred in good faith, couldn't sort it out certificate. And it's remarkable when you're working within that regime how much the parties do cooperate. They get sort of used to the idea. We seem to have a reduction in those angry emails and faxes that people exchange late in the day.
Sounds like there's no time to write them.
Well, but Don, that's actually the point. That point has been made. If you're really pushing against a tight time frame, there isn't any time to muck around. You're not encouraged to, and the incentive to do so is greatly reduced. That's exactly the point that some of the practitioners have made.
Now, with respect to this discovery under the fast track direction, how much does that differ from the normal discovery you have in, say, for instance, patent cases in your court?
It's just more judicially. More judicially supervised. It's probably actually, as it should be in all cases, because discovery has so many dreadful possibilities for time wasting. The notion, the old common law procedure notion that you could just put in a notice and discovery is a right, it's really, we can't afford that anymore.
The practice direction contemplates trial by witnesses and trials by affidavit. The trial by affidavit sounds more like a motion. Will there be a provision for cross-examination of the affiants before the hearing?
Yeah, there is. And the judge will decide. Generally, it's not a point of contention. The judge will decide how the final conference, the pre-trial conference, affidavit or viva voce evidence, but certainly there's, if the evidence is on affidavit, the witnesses would have to be cross-examined. A lot of material, though, falls out of contention at some of these early at one or other of these major conferences, because you really have to say, well, why are you challenging that? And if there's a good reason, sure, you absolutely have every facility to cross-examine. If there's no good reason, well, you no doubt won't press it. All this is carried out, I should say, within the framework of the proper exercise of judicial power. I mean, it sounds pretty radical, but it's just active case management. And it, of course, always has to be conducted within the framework of procedural fairness and all the sort of things that both our legal systems virtually take for granted. The procedure is intended to be fast but not oppressive. Now, under our constitution, there are limits to which you could, beyond which you could not go in forcing things on.
At a pretrial about 3 weeks before the trial itself, the trial judge will allocate the time for each party to present their case. Does that mean that the time will not necessarily be divided evenly between the parties?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm not known it to be unequal. There's actually no reason why it shouldn't be unequal. When one thinks of one's litigation experience, I mean, there's some cases in which the plaintiff will require more time. My impression is that we generally divide it equally, but more importantly, my impression is that the parties will generally sort that out between themselves, and the judge will very, very rarely have to make a ruling on that. Interestingly, one of the practice notes talks about chess clock rules. We've not had a problem of parties exceeding their time limits. Seem to keep within them. In my court, we have what we call is the aeroplane factor. I know that if I'm sitting in Sydney and there's a counsellor on a 6 o'clock flight back to Melbourne, it's amazing how often they finish by 4 o'clock. It's just a familiar notion that we all had as judges and as barristers, as counsel, of efficiently working within the time available. And that's what happens. It's actually not a big deal. It sounds a big deal, but it's not.
What sort of trial lengths are you anticipating for example, a trademark case that comes to trial within, say, 6 or 7 months of the initiation of proceedings?
We're generally averaging, we're not meant to get in the list, of course, unless it's under 5 days, 5 days or under. That's 5 days in fast track, which could be 8 or 10 days in non-fast track. I would have thought a couple of days.
What's been the reaction of the IP bar to the fast track direction, or how involved was the bar in its formulation?
Bar was very closely consulted about this, it was introduced after a lot of consultation, including with the IP bar, and they're very supportive of it. The people who really like it are the attorneys, because they say the clients love it, they get a result quickly. I was talking to an attorney couple of days ago in connection with an interview about fast track. He said that he thought that he was an IP attorney, he thought that he could get a copyright case on in fast track for about, and this is remarkable, but he said about a fifth of the cost that he would usually have in an ordinary litigation. But the general view is that the fast track procedure reduces costs by about 2/3. This attorney, using specifically a trademark case as an example, sorry, a copyright case as an example, I think it was I think it was a T-shirt copyright, one of those ones. He thought it was about a fifth. That of course is getting the case to the point of trial. Once it's at trial, you're still going to save money because the issues will be more closely defined. But no, it's a cost saver. The other people who like it, counsel, because they are working in commercial timelines, which are quite different from judicial timelines often. And they don't like to have to report to their board every month. So they like it. It's very popular with the solicitors, as we call them, the trial of the attorneys and corporate counsel.
Well, now that you're mastering trademark and copyright cases and getting them under control, do you anticipate creating some fast-track rules for patent cases anytime soon?
Yes. We have a procedure for patent cases, which leads along a fairly similar line. I will give you, for your website, a reference to the patent practice note. It's quite complicated, but it proceeds along a fairly similar line, and that's been quite successful. I'm just looking at my patent stats here in the Melbourne or Victoria District Registry. I noticed that the patent. Yes, here we are. Time frames for the disposition of patents. 2009. Well, they're not bad. I mean, they've come down from 20 to 30 months in 2005 to. Well, I haven't. Oh, yeah, they have come down. They've come down in the Victoria Registry down to 13 months.
By about half. That's pretty good.
Yeah, look, the stats are a bit all over the place. Let me see. Now, the average 21, 20, 20, and they're in the 20s overall, and they're going down. And that's to actual disposition. They're not too bad. And fast track has also had a flow on effect. I mean, it because the people who will be doing the IP bar will be familiar with fast track, so in copyright or trademark cases, something of the same atmosphere can move over into patent cases. So it is speeding things up. Of course, it does involve. It involves a bit of a culture shift, but we've not had I don't think we've had any resistance from the bar. They see the merits of it.
Well, congratulations! You've taken on an extremely difficult task, and it sounds like you're actually achieving results.
Yeah, it's interesting, Don. I mean, it does seem to be working. I delivered a paper. A couple of weeks ago, last week, to the Pacific Judicial Conference, in which I sought to analyse why fast track actually worked, and there are quite a lot of interesting. These are just hypotheses that will need to be tested, but there are quite a lot of interesting. Pressures at work here. One of them is simply the judge, when the judge says to the parties, as he or she has to in fast track, I will aim to get the judgment out within 60 days of matter being over. That creates a sort of a moral pressure.
The comment I made in Ottawa when you were speaking to our gathering was that I thought that there was a tremendous effect having the trial judge cutting out the nonsense early in the proceedings, because that reflected both on the client and on counsel.
Let me talk about that for a minute. The Federal Court of Australia introduced some years ago the individual docket system, which we borrowed from the United States, the federal courts there, and adapted to our own needs. And that has become something of an article of faith with our judges. I mean, the individual docket system, as you would know, it's the cases, the wheel allocates the case at the time of filing, and it goes into that judge's docket, and he or she handles it right through to trial and judgment. That's the theory. Now, added to that, in our court, we have what we call a panel system, so that some judges will specialise in matters such as admiralty and maritime, patents, tax, and so forth. The specialist judges have their own wheel, as it were, so that the case comes in, it's a patent case, it will be allocated to a judge in the patent, on the patent panel. To be a member of the patent panel, you have to commit yourself to be an expert in the field. If you're not already, then you've got to get on top of it and stay on top of it and attend our various judicial education seminars and so forth to be on top of the field. Now, that's the individual docket system. There was a worry within the court that the fast track might cut across that so that you'd get these brilliant case management judges who do the case management aspect of it and then send the case all packaged up in pink ribbon ready for trial to a different judge. And the judges felt that that was really cutting back on the great benefits of the individual docket system. So ideally, and it is the case so far in Melbourne, and will be the case, I think, in Sydney. Ideally, the judge who is the great case manager and does the scheduling conferences and so forth will be the trial judge. That's the ideal. It's not essential that that should be so, but it's ideal that it should. Ideally, it should be. So the absolute ideal would be that all judges, say, in intellectual property cases, are brilliant case managers, absolutely on top of everything, can do the fast-track case management and do the trial and do them all brilliantly. That's the perfect world. Some judges, some courts, let's not talk about my own, are better case managers than others. And ideally, everyone would be a brilliant case manager and every patent judge would be a brilliant patent judge, and you combine the two. You could ensure that, I suppose, by having all these great case management conferences done by brilliant case managers and all the trials done by someone else. But I think the better view is that the trial is done, trial and the case management is done by the same judge. And that's a very strong view amongst my colleagues, that it's pure to the docket system. It gives the judge control over the management of her or his own cases and docket, and it's the better way to go. But it's not essential. And I know, for example, our sister court, there is a different system, and I'm sure it works very well.
Well, I think having the scheduling conference judge be the trial judge probably sets the tone for the whole case and puts both.
And I agree with that, I think I'm almost reluctant to agree with it, because I think it's probably, if one could manage things more efficiently, if you had a bit more flexibility. But I think, in theory, you are right, and that's what we're trying to do. I think there will be cases where we just simply won't have the resources to ensure that that's so, but I agree with you. I think that should be the ideal.
Well, it's an ambitious project that seems to be bearing fruit.
Yeah, it does. The last time I took out the stats, we'd finalised over 70 cases in the pilot. 17 of those went to judgment. 33 were finalised by agreement between the parties at or following court-annexed dispute resolution. 17 were settled or discontinued by the parties without that, and 5 were removed by the list, from the list. Now, the 17 that went to judgment, the judgments were delivered within an average of 36.6 days, as I think I've mentioned, and the average time of them all to finalisation from commencement was about 4 months. So, you know, it's getting through it. There have only been 3 appeals when I last looked. One was discontinued, one was allowed, and there's one that's still under, still reserved. There were no appeals on any natural justice or procedural fairness grounds, and we've not had complaints about the speed of the process. And the bar, as I say, the bar has embraced it.
Sounds like a win all around.
Seems to be. Hard work for the judges. But on the other hand, you know, judicial heaven is getting your judgments out quickly, and judicial hell is not. So if you've got a procedure that pushes you along, I guess that may be one of the benefits of it. But we found the profession is it's really been a bit of a culture change, and the profession. The profession's been very cooperative. The process encourages cooperation. You absolutely put your hit the nail on the head when you said that there's not time for procedural gymnastics. There's not. The other thing is when you are moving at great speed and you've got a judge who's very interventionist, parties will prefer to and are encouraged by the rules to sort things out between themselves rather than bother the judge, who will be cranky. That's in Canadian English, but it's
universally understood.
Okay. Well, the judge will be cranky or scratchy if the parties haven't tried to sort it out. And the procedure, as you'll see, requires them to have a meet, confer in good faith. The other thing I should have mentioned too is we have proportionate discovery, so that proportionate good faith searches. That's a big topic in itself, but it's part of this sort of very active case management that you can do if you're working within this general spirit of cooperation. So the parties still present their cases with vigour, but the disputes are the issues are narrowed, and a lot of the stuff that it's really quite silly and unnecessary doesn't happen anymore.
Well, the rest of the world is watching. Chief Justice Black, thank you very much for these comments. Greatly appreciated.
Not at all. It's a great pleasure. Now, might I add, it was a particular pleasure to be in Ottawa a couple of months ago and to meet with the Canadian, the IP people from the Canadian Bar Association and our federal court colleagues. It is an international jurisdiction, but one of the pleasures of my judicial life has been the contact with judges and practitioners in other countries, but particularly in Canada, where we have close historical and other bonds.
Thank you again.
That's a great pleasure. All the best.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My guest for this podcast has been the Honorable Michael Black, Chief Justice of the Federal Court of Australia. For further information regarding Canada's Streamlining Complex Litigation Practice Notice and the Federal Court of Australia's Fast Track Initiatives, and for further information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You have been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Cameron McKendrick LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.